to get intimate with Checkpoint Intimates.
Yes, you are here with another episode of Checkpoint Intimates, where two members of the Checkpoint team go one-on-one and get intimate on a particular gaming topic.
We're doing
My
it
name
live.
Is Elliot. We're doing it live.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Fuck it.
The award-nominated Checkpoint.
Look how you've raised the expectations.
I know. My name is Ali, joined by Luke.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
How are we doing?
I'm good. I am hyped up.
Yep.
Because we're talking about my favorite things today.
I know. I actually I was thinking about, like, what can we talk about on today's show? I'm thinking about, well, I'm going to be talking with Luke probably, so let's find something I know he cares a lot about.
Did you actually do that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's nice.
But it's also relevant, right? Because at the time of recording, there's been a lot of details surrounding Xbox Game Pass kind of bubbling up and news being reported on and stuff like that. So I really want to take an opportunity to have a bit of a breakdown of Xbox Game Pass and the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate and Xbox Game Pass for PC and all the plans Microsoft has going forward into the future with their Game Pass service.
Yeah.
Now, it's a big one, right? Now, you've been engaging in Xbox Game Pass for ages. Do
About
you want to
a year.
Tell us what it is.
So, Xbox Game Pass, it's, I guess you could, in a way, consider it kind of like the Netflix of Xbox.
Yeah.
Except you don't stream, you download. So, essentially, you'll pay, about $10 a month for Xbox Game Pass on console. And essentially, with that $10, that unlocks a library of games you can download. Now, all of Xbox's first-party AAA titles are included in that. So you get, like, the full Gears franchise, Forza, things like that. On top of that as well, though, there's a bunch of other games on there that you can choose to download as well. There's indie games that are really cool. There's some other third-party titles that are also really big. So you've got, like, you know, Resident Evils and, like, Metro and things like that.
Well, we've only just heard that recently Devil May Cry 5 is going to be part of Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah.
Or it already is, right?
It is now. Last week they added it. So it literally is this service and it's constantly changing. So they're adding new titles to it and they remove some of the less played titles off it. But I haven't been impacted by that. The titles they remove tend to be really low on the scale of caring.
And assuming you continually pay for this service monthly, you'll continue to have access to these games. As soon as you stop paying, you've been cut off.
Exactly. And it sounds like, I don't want to lose my access to my library. But at the same time, the part about Xbox Game Pass that is so appealing from the outset is if you even want to play just one of those games out of that 100 that are on there, and there's probably about 100 games on there, if you want to play one, you pay $10 a month, even if that's $120 a year. You'd pay probably at least $80 for a new release title when it comes out anyway. So if you're planning on buying 1.5 games this year that would be on Xbox Game Pass, you might as well get Xbox Game Pass instead, and that gives you access to this entire huge library at your fingertips straight away.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, that opens up whole conversations about ownership and what's more valuable, like a subscription service or actually physically having and owning the game and whatever. I don't think we really want to tackle that too much because I'm coming into this as somebody who, during E3, I watched the Microsoft presentation where they announced that Xbox Game Pass was coming to PC. And I'm a PC player.
You are.
And they offered a $1 kind of month, first month $1, and I'm like, well, obviously I'm doing that. So since that E3 announcement, I've been subscribed to Xbox Game Pass for PC. It is cheaper on the PC platform than it is on the Xbox platform, and I think that's because maybe they've got more competition or because there's less features included in that. It's just kind of the games you're getting, and there are less games probably as well, presumably, because it's a newer edition. Xbox Game Pass has been going for ages. The PC Game Pass has only just started. So I've gone in and they've got a new app for the PC. I've downloaded it yesterday. It's sitting on my computer. I haven't actually played. I've been paying for Xbox Game Pass for PC since June or July, whenever E3 was. But I'm yet to play a game. But I've downloaded 3. So I'm starting strong, right? And I'm going to jump into these real quick because I can see some games on the horizon coming to Xbox Game Pass that I'm really excited for. For instance, they've recently announced that Age of Empires, the definitive edition, is coming to Xbox Game Pass, as well as The Bard's Tale 4 and Blair Witch, which is a game that I'm really excited to play. And as soon as it releases, I've got it already for Xbox Game Pass on PC.
I think this is the super appealing part of Game Pass, right? Is, the services where there's games that get added to them later on after they've been released, and it's kind of cool. Like, you get your Xbox Live games with Gold, or your PlayStation Plus free games, or even things like Humble Bundle, where you've got, like, these games have been out for a while and now I can get them for next to nothing. This is great. What's good about Game Pass, I found, is they'll often have games lately where they'll launch and the same day they come out, they're on Game Pass. So Blair Witch comes out August 30th. It's available on Game Pass straight away.
Immediately, yeah.
Immediately. They also, Xbox committed quite early. They said all of the Xbox first-party games will be on Game Pass straight away. So again, Gears 5 comes out in a couple of weeks. That's going to be on Game Pass from day one. And Outer Worlds is another one. Will be on Game Pass from day one. A huge upcoming RPG. People are really excited about it.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder if that's coming to PC. That'll change everything.
And so it's really clever, you know. So it's not just saying I'm going to pay for a service and play some old games. It's saying, well, no, if I pay for this subscription, I'll get access to new release games the day they come out.
Yeah.
So to me, it's an easy value proposition, right?
Yeah. And look, it's a good service. I don't want this to become too much of an advertisement for it. I want to talk about some other things as well.
Sure.
Because part of the news cycle has been this kind of tagline that I keep hearing where Microsoft wants to bring Xbox Game Pass to all platforms, right? Now, this is their foreseeable future. This is their plan for the kind of future, the next generation of console and stuff like that. They want to bring Xbox Game Pass to their direct competitors, including Sony and Nintendo.
Yeah.
They've literally said all platforms, wherever they can get it, they want to put Xbox Game Pass on it. And it's such an interesting idea. Because number one, they need this collaboration to actually go through and work. And there's the potential for that to happen. We're seeing, you know, crossplay becoming a bigger thing. We're seeing this kind of collaboration between the big console manufacturers.
Yeah, I'm seeing things like, you know, Xbox recently added Xbox Live to the Switch.
Mm, exactly.
So you can log in on your Xbox Live profile on your Nintendo Switch, which is, it sounds unheard of, but they made that collaboration, that choice.
And it sounds ridiculous, like Xbox Game Pass on PlayStation. It sounds silly, but we keep making steps that almost make it seem more and more possible. And they obviously want to do this. So what does that mean, though? Like, are we going to see Xbox first-party titles playable on the PlayStation, but only through Xbox Game Pass?
I think that it's going to be a lot of talk about curation and how that's going to look, right? Because at the moment, you have a game. Let's pick one out from this list of games. Like Dead Cells, for example, right?
Yeah.
Now, Dead Cells has been around for a while. Really great indie game from last year, really cool roguelike elements. We love Dead Cells.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that's coming to Xbox Game Pass on September 5th. Great. So, all of a sudden, you have that on Xbox and PC. That's two platforms. Dead Cells is also available on PlayStation and on Switch, right? So, at the moment, they get paid a good chunk of money, I assume, to be part of the Game Pass thing. So, Xbox would pay the developer a certain amount of money to be able to advertise that as part of their service.
Yes.
If Xbox Game Pass is all of a sudden on PlayStation and Switch, for example, that means if you have Xbox Game Pass, that's one less platform that you're going to spend money on buying that game outright. And that game might cost $20 in the case of Dead Cells. In the case of Blair Witch, it might cost like $100, right? So all of a sudden, the more Xbox Game Pass applicable consoles that you have, the more that dilutes how much money people are spending on just buying your game outright. Because people aren't going to buy your game outright if they can just subscribe to a service for $10 a month and get it anyway.
Yeah.
And so I wonder when they say, I want to put Xbox Game Pass across other platforms, I'm like, are developers really going to want to go with that?
Well, it's interesting, right? It's a big thought experiment because you're right. It's weighing up, right? Imagine you're a developer and you're about to release your game. Now, you could go about this one of two ways. You can either sell the game to the consumer, which is the traditional method of, hey, our game's awesome, you should play it. And then the consumer decides whether they want to play it. And if they say yes, then the developer gets money. But you can also sell your game to services, right? So a lot of people have been doing this with the Epic Game Store. They've obviously been doing it with Xbox Game Pass as well. And they'll make that active decision to say, hey, you know what? We're going to sell our game to Microsoft, put it on the Xbox Game Pass at launch. We'll get a good chunk of money from them, but that probably means we get less money from the consumers directly because you're right, they're less likely to buy something if they get it for cheaper by subscribing to a service.
Yeah. Like for me,
it's a trade-off. It's a balance, and you've got to make that call on a case-by-case basis.
It is a trade-off and a balance. And I think that, you know, what makes the most sense in a practical application for developers is when they have a game that comes out in February, for example, like Devil May Cry 5, perfect example, right? Came out in March, you know, really good reviews, like critically quite popular, known franchise. Everyone ran out and probably bought that on day one. If you didn't, you were probably waiting for it to be on sale. You might wait for June, July, you might pick it up. Now it's August, it's on Game Pass. Anyone who wanted to buy Devil May Cry 5 initially has already bought it,
yeah,
probably. So now you've got Xbox saying, hey, we'll give you some money to put DMC5 onto Game Pass. All of a sudden, they've got this boost in game, people playing their game, and they've got the financial boost from Xbox as well. And if their game happens to have microtransactions or anything like that, there's more people in that pool playing their game that might spend more money on their game as well. So it's kind of this win-win. The game's been out for a few months. That's a good time to jump onto Game Pass. What I wonder is for these games like Blair Witch, when they launch and day one they're on Game Pass, that instantly loses value as a title, right?
Mm.
Why would you go to a store and pay $80 for Blair Witch when you can just have it as part of your subscription? Or if you don't have a subscription, just pay $10, play the game, probably finish it in a couple of weeks, and then not have it ever again.
I mean, Blair Witch is a good example to thrust upon us because it is the kind of game you play once and then you don't play again, right? And I'm not saying that because Blair Witch is necessarily a bad game. I just mean it's a narrative-driven single-player experience, right? You play it for the game, you experience the game, and then you put it away and you find something new to do. Now, obviously, a lot of games are going for a different approach where they want you to play it month by month by month and keep going and hold your engagement and keep charging you where they can. But yeah. Blair Witch, to my knowledge, definitely not one of those games.
Well, it's a small... It's not a Gears, is it?
No.
Or a Forza. It's not some big franchise. It has a name to it with Blair Witch. It's a known entity in terms of pop culture, and you know, we hear Blair Witch and we have certain associations with that franchise from the movies and stuff like that. But I do think it's a risk having on that service. But then at the same time, if they just launched without the Xbox Game Pass money, would that have been a problem for them too? Because maybe they wouldn't get those guaranteed players and the game would get lost in the ether.
That's the question, right? Because you call it a risk, but maybe they're calling it risk aversion. Maybe they're saying, hey, we sell to Xbox, we put our game on Xbox Game Pass, and we know we've at least broken even. We know that this is a successful title even before it's launched because Microsoft was willing to pick it up. They've given us enough money. We're satisfied with that arrangement. Any like sales we get on top of that is a bonus.
And gaming is such a word of mouth industry too, in terms of gamers, right? You know, I talk to my friends every night about video games. We're online playing a game together and we're chatting about other games that we're playing at the time. One of us says, oh, I'm playing this at the moment. The rest of us go, is it good? Oh yeah, it's really good. You should try it. That's how most social circles work. We recommend products to each other. You know, word of mouth shouldn't be underestimated. So with Blair Witch, that's a game that I honestly would not have bought on day one. Probably not. Yeah. I would wait for reviews, wait for my friends to play it, check a discount bin around Boxing Day, try and pick it up for $20 if I'm lucky, you know. That's how I would have originally consumed Blair Witch, the video game. It's on Game Pass August 30th. I'm going to be downloading that game on August 30th. I'm going to play it that night. I'm excited to play it that night because I've got it straight away. I know I'm going to have it. I already own it today, basically. So instantly, you've got someone in me who's going to play a game that previously wouldn't have bothered for a long time, if ever, because the industry is always changing and more games are coming out. I'm going to go and tell my mates if Blair Witch is good or not, and that cycle continues. You know what I mean? So there is value in getting your game into as many hands as possible, especially if it's a new franchise like this Blair Witch game basically is.
It also makes me wonder, though, because we keep... Like, every time I think about this conversation and similar conversations, it always goes through my mind, but what if, right? What if these kind of games didn't sell themselves to a service and instead went the traditional route and all of a sudden they're the next big thing and it's huge and millions of people purchase it? And all of a sudden, all this revenue is coming the developer's way, but none of that actually happens because everybody just consumes it through Game Pass and they don't get that big revenue chunk, right? And as you said, that's where the risk comes in. But it does make me wonder, do games actually suffer from sales that much because of services like this? Like, we're assuming they do, but I guess we don't have the stats to prove it.
There hasn't been stats, and there's no stats that say whether a game on Game Pass gets downloaded more through that service than it does get purchased on other digital stores. You know, I'd love to see some comparisons.
Yeah.
Maybe down the track we will. It's a bit like how Netflix keep their cards very close to their chest. Netflix don't reveal how many people watch Netflix, which is really strange. We know they're doing well because they're making all these high-profile shows, right? But no one really knows how many people have sat down and watched Orange is the New Black, We assume they do because it keeps getting renewed. But have they watched it? Do people actually like this show? And I think that Game Pass has this same aura about it where you go, oh, we assume that it's doing well because they've got like Devil May Cry and shit. But like, is it actually successful? People playing them? Yeah. I think they are.
I mean, look, a company like Microsoft is totally wealthy enough to fund a project even if it's not doing well.
They take a loss.
In an attempt to make it, build it up to something profitable.
Yeah.
And maybe we are in the stage where it's not, but, you know, presumably they must be doing something decent, right? Because they want to keep spreading it. Like, I don't think a company who's making a lost profit says, oh, let's we want it on all platforms, right? Presumably they're doing okay.
Yeah. I think they must be. I think... on paper, it makes sense that it would do well because we are in this age of consuming content in a streaming subscription sense. You know, subscriptions are all over the place. With Netflix as an example, you know, people subscribe to all kinds of things to get their content now because they subscribe to a service, they get millions of things as opposed to going to a store and buying one thing. For a lot more money. It makes sense. Subscribing is a easy, direct, debitable, forget about it kind of process, which I think is quite smart. And I know friends who have had Game Pass and just forgotten they had it and just let it come out every month.
That's every subscription service, isn't it? This is what gym memberships like crave. They love the people who forget they have it or are just so lethargic that they don't care.
Correct.
And they just get charged week after week or month after month.
And $10 a month isn't really a big deal.
No, it's enough to forget about, isn't it?
I mean, that's a big deal. Problem. It's a big deal when you have Xbox, PlayStation, Netflix, Stan, WWE Network, Disney Plus, Disney Plus 3. Like, it's when you have all these things, you go, well, hang on a second, I'm actually subscribed to like $100 worth of things every week.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit different. But I think that Xbox Game Pass, it's on trend. And I think that it's a smart move. Whether it's literally paying off right now, I don't know, but it makes sense on paper.
It does remind me, though, of something I remember hearing and kind of being shocked a bit about was... it's this whole idea of games going on sale decrease their value, right? And this conversation came up a lot when Humble Bundle was first big. And the idea was that, you know, you release your game, you sell it for full price. You know, maybe 6 months later, you drop it down 25% off. A year later, you drop it down to 50% off. And then maybe 2 years later, you put it in a Humble Bundle for bargain bin prices, dirt cheap, along with a collection of other games. And you sell it for like maybe that game itself is like a dollar. And that's it. And that's the kind of life cycle of a game. And as the game progresses, it loses value. Apparently, it was a bit of a fallacy. The idea is that Humble actually provided some stats saying, hey, here's the games we put on into our Humble Bundle, and I know everybody thinks that that decreases its value, but actually, no, the game continues to sell after at full price, and there's no like slump in that kind of purchasing from consumers. And I think it's a really interesting concept because, you know, here we are assuming the perceived value of a product is decreasing because it's going on sales. But the reality is, not everybody is sitting by their computer looking at when games are on sales. They're just buying games when they want to buy games, regardless. And word of mouth plays a big role in that. Your friend plays a game because it was part of a discount bargain bin kind of collection. They love it. All of a sudden, they're telling their friends, and their friends are buying at full price because the bundle isn't going anymore.
Yeah, but you still want the game, right?
Yeah, and maybe Xbox Game Pass has that exact same mentality. Hey, jump on our service. Here's some stats. Your game doesn't actually sell any less than it would have.
I know it's not a super specific relevant example, but I want to bring up talking about, you know, games that get word of mouth and people buy them after the sale period. Rocket League, probably one of the most successful indies in recent memory.
Huge.
That was a free game as part of PlayStation Plus when it launched. It launched on that service. Everyone that had that monthly subscription service downloaded Rocket League. No one knew what it was. Oh, cars playing soccer. Righto. Oh my God, best game ever. Like, so good. I downloaded it. All my friends who had PlayStation Plus downloaded it. And then, of course, after a month of being on PlayStation Plus, it was no longer on PlayStation Plus. It was $20 or whatever it was. And then it released on Xbox. Then it released on Switch. So it's full price on those platforms as well. And it got such positive word of mouth because everyone was raving about it so much. People that would have never bought it played it on PlayStation Plus. So much so that everyone ended up buying it afterwards because it was so loved and everyone had to have it and people were happy to buy it across multiple platforms, even on their Xbox, on their Switch. You know, it's Rocket League. It's so cool. I consider buying it a couple more times myself because I loved it so much. It's on Game Pass now as well, funnily enough. but, I mean, that's an example of a game that released in a way where you might think, oh, they're going to lose profit by not getting those sales on day one. But PlayStation gave them a good amount of money to be on PlayStation Plus. Then because of that investment, that risk, that paid off. People talked about their game. And then everyone bought their game. And now it's one of the most recent sort of big indie successes in memory.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's doing gangbusters. I mean, it has for years now. Obviously.
It still sponsors major wrestling events today. It's like, literally, it's like, oh, SummerSlam is sponsored by Rocket League. And I'm like, what do you mean sponsored by Rocket League? That game is 7 years old. Like, are you still sponsoring it? It's crazy the amount of momentum that game still has.
Yeah.
So that's an example. I mean, not every game's going to have that sort of risk-reward payoff in that way, but obviously that's one that they looked at the market, looked at the genre of their game and thought, this is a good way to get us out there. And it went gangbusters.
Yeah, it's a great way to build momentum for your game, as you just said. And yeah, I think maybe that's the benefit of these services, right? Maybe there is no trade-off. Maybe it is mostly just positives coming for the consumer, for Microsoft, and for the developers themselves, which makes you wonder, like, is this the future? Like, are we actually going to see subscription services take over as the primary way people are consuming and purchasing games? Like, is that the future of gaming?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this goes down the track and how much support this gets ongoing. Obviously, right now, it looks like it's getting a lot of support, a lot of good games getting added to it. But, you know, we're going to hear success stories and failures from this eventually as well once it comes down to it. You know, and I think it's going to come down to the genre of game that goes on there too. You know, we're talking about Blair Witch and the risk it's taking. But at the same time, horror is quite a niche genre. Not everyone loves a horror game. People don't run out and buy horror games on day one for the most part, right? It's more of a slow burn, much like the genre itself. And I think that, you know, Blair Witch going on Game Pass is a smart move probably because people are going to try it that maybe wouldn't have gone and bought it. People who are a bit scared of horror games might not have bought a horror game on day one because they hate horror. Oh, but they'll give it a download and play it with their friends for a laugh, right? And I think that, you know, it depends on what kind of outcome they're expecting. You know, if you have like a Red Dead Redemption 2, you're never going to see that game on a Game Pass type service, right? Because people are still buying that game full price today.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't they? It's a great game, right? I don't think it's amazing, but I understand people that do. And it's a well-made game and it's a high budget and production values are there to a point where I can see they wouldn't want to use a service like this because they're still making cash. Same as why you wouldn't see a Zelda game on a service like this.
Exactly. I was going to say Nintendo doesn't seem like the company that would do something similar either because, yeah, like the reality is there is a bit of devaluing happening when you put yourself on a service like this because people will immediately see you as not this high tier full price product anymore because it's not a full price product if it's on a $10 subscription, yet some games clearly want to go that path and have done it really well. You have to see, maybe one day Nintendo games and Red Dead Redemption and the likes will be on Game Pass style services. I don't know, to be honest.
Or the big question is much like Xbox have previously touted about the future being all about streaming games and not buying them, are we going to see a world that's like it is with Netflix and Stan and Amazon and stuff, where they are the TV channels, is these streaming services? Will these games as a service, subscription services, be the only avenues that we have? Will there be an Xbox Game Pass, a PlayStation Game Pass, the Ubisoft Pass that's coming out soon? You know what I mean? Will all these major top-tier publishers have their own version of this? And that's how we'll consume games in the future. Not by buying them digitally individually, not by buying them from brick-and-mortar stores, but by subscribing a la Netflix and getting our content month to month to month to month.
It's an interesting thought, and I guess the answer is it's whatever the consumer wants, right? Ooh. If that's what people keep buying into, then that becomes the future. And it's like, yeah, it's a bit of a scary future, but maybe it's the route we're moving in.
Streaming, it's scary for us Australians with our shit internet. Thanks, NBN, piece of trash. Like, if we have streaming only as an option, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Like, we need to have at least a download option like Game Pass. If I'm going to stream my content, there's a reason PlayStation Now never launched over here because they knew it would not friggin' work.
Yeah, and look, we're talking about quite a distant future here, I'm thinking, because
oh, yeah.
like sure these things are going to happen, but they're going to happen in tandem with more traditional methods, and that tandem, that's going to be around for a long time before it crumbles, right? A long time.
And people still buy CDs, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? People still buy DVDs. These are not dead things. They might not be the go-to thing nowadays, but they're still out there in stores, you know what I mean? So I think it's going
to
be...
Tell that to Blockbuster Video.
I will, the one that's left in Australia that we have. But yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, a long transition. You're right. I think it's going to be, you know, brick and mortar will eventually be phased out with games, and it'll be digital individual purchases, and then maybe eventually it'll be these subscription platforms. But yeah, that's at least 10, 15 years down the pipeline.
Yeah, and that is about all the time we've got. We've been talking about Xbox Game Pass and similar services.
And the future.
And the future. Woo! Game distribution.
We're streaming on shitty internet.
My name has been Elliot. Your name has been Luke.
It has been. Well, I'm gone.
Now, who knows what it is, but now, it has been Luke.
Forever. Goodbye.
And we will catch you on the next episode of Checkpoint Intimates.
Bye!
You've been listening to Checkpoint Intimates. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher.